Hello, friends. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 107A, and we are in the chapter on Taurus. Let's see what we've been talking about before here. Yes, we've been talking about the possible effect of the Taurian energy should it be misused by the developed lower nature, leading to the will to power and great personality ambition. This is what happened during the Second World War, particularly, and subsequently. This Taurian energy is not yet picked up or utilized by those who are really ready for it. So it less readily produces a stimulation of the will to serve the plan as it is grasped by the world aspirants, the world disciples, and initiates. It is a sign of materialization. It is an earth sign, and Vulcan is always involved in bringing spirit into matter. It has a kind of a connection with the mineral kingdom and with the plane of density. And its downward pointing arrow, one of the symbols for Vulcan, shows the way it takes the energies from the higher worlds and drives them into materialization on the dense physical level. Matter of fact, the beginning of that that stanza on the Blessed One flies like an arrow into matter. He destroys or ruptures the way by which he might return. He grounds himself deeply in the depths of form. That is very Vulcanian and is connected with the first ray of Vulcan. The first ray is naturally connected with the seventh plane. One and seven are the opposites of each other in this respect. So now we're going on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure 107, and here we have the idea that owing to the world glamour, the true purpose and ideal set before our planetary forces by the all-creating will becomes distorted by many people. We have the seven fundamental purposes of Sanat Kumara given in the rays and the initiations, but these purposes have to make their way through such distorting atmospheres and fields that they become wrongly appropriated by lesser centers of identity, by personalities. In other words, they are deflected away from the general good and are sought. They are sought to reinforce these selfish centers. There are many human beings who are, in this respect, skillful, intelligent, but still selfish centers. So many people. These many people. They are not polarized. Here, let me just get a good. I always like to have one of those brackets in case we have to write something down. They are not polarized in the divine will, but are as yet centered in their personalities, and hence only a few appreciate the beauty of the intended group life. And there's that theme of beauty again in relation to Taurus, which as a constellation transmits the fourth ray. Only a very few appreciate the beauty of the divinely intended, intended by the planetary logos, group life. Let's see here. Yeah. Okay. Group purpose and group fusion. The beauty of the intended group life, appreciate the group purpose, very few, and group fusion even. We realize the students selected by the Tibetan to form part of the groups he was intending to create had limited appreciation of these things, and I'm not sure that we, even 70 years later, maybe even 80 years later, would do any better. Group living tends to the fulfillment of free will in service and a free subordination of the lower will to the higher purpose in group formation. And notice the idea here of free subordination. There's not a compelled subordination. Perhaps if we were working under Pluto, as the Black Lodge often does, misappropriating those energies, there would be a compelled subordination. But the White Lodge, Great White Lodge, always leaves the will free, and its arrows of thought never touch the center of will, we are told, probably in the Agni Yoga books. So people just will not learn the needed lessons if they are compelled. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Well, you can shove his head under the water, but he's likely to drown. It has to be an act of will, freely originating in whatever type of center it may be. Through the glamour contacted, however, this group activity and life becomes twisted. It's no longer straight, right? It's bent, it's distorted, twisted into the imposed will and the glamour of the superstate. And we see much of this today in the movement in some groups towards religious theocracy. The, I would say, unholy union of church and state, which the founding fathers of at least America worked so hard, founding fathers of Western groups and civilizations worked so hard to separate, so that religious passions would not be enforced upon others. So many people have been killed, tortured in the name of God. And this, of course, is a great triumph for the Black Lodge. So wherever you find this type of totalitarian compulsion, which does not leave the will free but demands obedience and enforces obedience, we know we're dealing with some sort of radiation which had its origin in the Lords of Form. So twisted into the imposed will and concept of the superstate, this produces the imprisonment of the mind and the curtailment of all freedom, all free thought and free will, and naturally then there will not be the development of the inner individual if he is not left free to learn the lessons of his choices. We have a great battles going on today concerning freedom of speech, one of the major four freedoms enunciated by Franklin D. Roosevelt, a great first-rate disciple, really in that sense an enunciating disciple, as some of the disciples on the first ray are called not only destroyers but enunciators. And this is being challenged. Many of the gains that have been made during the 20th century and the victory of the Allies in World War II are now being challenged in the name of religion. It's a peculiar type of blindness which the proponents of that attitude cannot possibly see because they lack the psychological sophistication to really notice what it is and to really understand themselves. This is if all of the gains of psychology in the Western world have not been applied to these groups, oftentimes characterized by the sixth ray and exacerbated by the first ray, and also exasperated by the will to manipulate on the third ray. It's not a very pretty picture, and it has to be overcome. The humanity's dweller at this point, showing itself through the first, sixth, and third rays. The man becomes captive of the man-made state, which is ever an inadequate reflection of the state in which hierarchy and Shambhala exist. This gives a clue to much that is happening today. I suppose, you know, he was looking at the period of the Second World War, either right before or during, and to the headstrong process of the glamoured peoples. This is interesting because when you look at Germany, Italy, and Japan, which were the Axis powers in those days, so many of them characterized by the fourth and sixth ray, interestingly enough. He said that Germany was the greatest representative of glamour, Italy of illusion, and Japan of Maya. And Germany was by far the strongest, and the glamour was the strongest when compared with illusion and Maya. And let's take a look at the chart of Germany, and you see actually that Aries is the ruler, the sole ruler of Germany. And in this case, the Aries energy was misappropriated by the Piscean German glamoured personality of the time. This made a great reaction to that, of course, in Germany, and more perhaps of the fourth ray soul is coming in. So anyway, this gives a clue to much that is happening today, to the headstrong progress, you know, of the glamoured peoples. They worked through will without love, the triumph of the will, and the blitz or lightning aspect of their attacks show us an inversion of the Uranian Aries energy. So the headstrong progress of the glamour people to the stiffening of the individuals in their separative, wrong idealisms. Idealism is involved, of course, and I had a friend who considered Nazism really more of a religion than a political movement, and I think in many respects he was correct. So this rigidification, this crystallization induced by the first ray had its effect here, and there was no receptivity, suppleness. They were confirmed in their own willful wrong idealism. And to their acceptance of the imposition of a rule of life and an order of living, such seventh ray, first ray matters here, which is imposed upon them by force and which is not the free expression of free people. There's a certain, I'm remembering reading a book long ago. It was by a well-known Jewish psychologist, called Escape from Freedom. His name was Eric Fromm. I think he had a strong Aries quality in his writing. The word Fromm means pure or pious. It's interesting. And some of his books were written after the war, and he chronicled the way in which certain types of minds sought to give over the power of choice to some kind of father figure, some sort of leader or Führer who would take all the responsibility. It was an abrogation of responsibility. It gave a certain kind of personal relief because the faith was such that they could trust the Führer without reservation. The same force, secondly, and this is the Shambhala force, brings to other peoples and individuals a measure, never totality yet, but a measure of illumination. Mother of illumination is Taurus, and we're dealing here with the relationship of Taurus to the will to Shambhala, an illumination which reveals the underlying synthesis, which indicates the dualism which must finally vanish, and which indicates also the secret of right human relations. So illumination, the light, revealing synthesis, indicating a dualism and the lines of cleavage, but one begins to see through dualism and realize it as a state of perception and not a state of reality, because the opposites really are one thing, as you can tell if you, let's say, you take a length of some material and here are the opposites, but then you bend them and they meet, the opposites meet in the circle, which is always interesting to me. The dualism, which must finally vanish, I suppose, in the perception of wholeness, and indicates the secret of right human relations. So the light of Taurus, when properly used, the light of Shambhala, the light of the will, reveals these factors, which are, in a way, hardly yet much perceived among most people. Perhaps right human relations is the most accessible. The underlying synthesis and the erroneous nature of dualism maybe are not widely appreciated. One reaction produces the onward rush. You know, he uses that word when dealing with Taurus so often. You know, once you get Taurus moving, it onward rushes. Of course, it can be a long time because of its inertial qualities to get it moving. One reaction produces the onward rush of the materialistic systems of life. I think he said that if Nazism had prevailed, it would have produced the most materialistic civilization that humanity has ever seen. Not a very cheerful promise. But fortunately, it did not. I think we'll be once again up against something similar. I think the third blow, so to speak, of the forces of form are now prepared to attack humanity and are, in fact, attacking humanity. One reaction produces the onward rush of the materialistic systems of life, thought, and desire. So by life there, I suppose he means the etheric vitality. He's dividing it into three aspects. Dashing blindly forward, Taurus rushes blindly until Sagittarius directs, it is said on page 332 of the astrology book. Dashing blindly forward in the force of their own momentum and producing a stage of powerful expression and active movement. This is how materialism works. It has that self-assurance that comes from ignorance of their own motives and of the results of their glamoured desires. So we're talking about reactions here, reactions to the Shambhala force and to the will. The other reaction demonstrates in a far vision of possibility, the eye of the bull here, Aldebaran, active, and a steady movement forward in spite of the imminent dangers and difficulties. It's very hard to stop a steadily moving bull. It's an animal of great strength and moving forward with all due deliberate speed instead of charging blindly. We have the choice, of course, how we will respond to this energy, which is very powerful because the Shambhala energy is making its impact upon humanity in a real crescendo compared to how it has impacted the human race before this. The bull, therefore, is dual in expression, and we might, you know, look at it here. The two horns indicate this. Today we see the willful dash. You know, it's almost as if it's out of control of the supervising higher will. The willful dash of the lower nature of humanity embodied in the forces of aggression, moving rapidly to possess and take over what other people owned. I understand that the Nazis looked at each country not in terms of its values and the civilization it had produced, but in terms of its resources and what they could acquire and possess to further their own ends. I suppose maybe one day we will realize how close humanity came to a great disaster. Of course, we have Christ now, after that Second World War, trying to prevent a final war. He's doing all he can to help humanity avoid or avert a final war. The situation must be dire indeed, but we human beings don't have a wide enough point of view or a deep enough understanding of motives and directions to realize how serious the situation really is. So we see the willful dash of the lower nature of humanity embodied in the forces of aggression. Now, we have to remember that Hitler was a Taurus, and a number of the Nazis had strong earth signs there, Capricorn and Taurus. And the purposeful progress of those people and peoples who seek, even if without full understanding, to work out the plans of God, proceeding in spite of each other. And both are working side by side. And I suppose the will to illumination, it's oftentimes a Leo kind of approach, but also Taurus, I would say, that will is working out in the world today despite the materialistic tendencies. DK did say that the second Shambhala impact here in the year 2000 need not be so destructive as the earlier ones. Although 1975, you kind of wonder, was that really a destructive Shambhala impact, or did it lead to the synthesis through intercommunication? The most destructive activity we've seen is that which has been going on in relation to the Great War, the First and Second World War, and it makes you wonder whether there was some Shambhala activity in the beginning of the 20th century, around 1925, let us say. It's not listed as a Shambhala impact, but at times DK seems to hint that that Shambhala force was much involved in the war. It was either left over from the Shambhala impact of 1825 or was occurring in the early part of the century itself. So that is as far as the evolutionary processes have taken humanity, and hence the critical situation now to be found, and I don't think he would alter his estimate. Now, if he were to assess humanity, there were so many warnings given and so many requirements that humanity had to fulfill within 25 years, and, you know, in a way they don't look fulfilled to me, at least, but there is a huge movement towards goodwill, and the question is, can it be sufficiently strong under positive Vulcan to stand with massed intent against the uprising world selfishness and world blindness? So we don't have that full understanding, and we're attempting to work out the plans of God without a really clear idea of what they may be, and this is going on simultaneously with this willful dash of the lower nature. Maybe it's waiting to dash again, you know. And this time, perhaps in the name of religion, we do remember that DK said that the next war, if it did occur, would be a religious war and far more terrible than anything humanity had ever seen. So many of those predictions seem to be incipient in the situation. They seem to be coming true to a degree, so we have to wonder whether we have failed to take the steps that DK advised. Well, you can't be pessimistic about this. You know, there's always a way to avert disaster. Even back in the December of 1942, disaster was unexpectedly averted by the intervention of the Lords of Liberation in a manner that DK says he cannot describe, but there was sufficient invocation to call them forth. And their intervention deflected the will to know. We are told of the scientists of the German powers deflected their will to know away from the secrets of the release of the atom and deflected the power to penetrate and understand those secrets toward the allied scientists. The question is, will the bull of desire or the bull of divine illumined expression succeed? And DK acts as if he really doesn't yet know. Now, this was, of course, written before the Second World War had come to an end, and there was great hope when it did, and so many of the real lovers of humanity did make moves at that time, which led to the founding of the United Nations and a whole new type of intercommunication and a caring for many national groups. There has been some decay of those hopes, some degeneration of those hopes. But let us see. This sign Taurus, is an earth sign, and hence the working out of the plan or the fulfillment of desire must be carried out upon the outer plane of life, which really means that if the earth signs are controlling, then the results will be seen upon the dense levels, the lower three subplanes, which are, of course, they're not really principled subplanes, solid, liquid, gas, and so forth, but it's going to be carried out in the world which our normal senses observe. This will or desire must express itself in the plane of outer living. It's a bit like Scorpio in that way, because Scorpio, being a triple sign, it works. Everything has to be proved, tried, and tested on the physical plane, and there demonstrated one's ability to conquer vice and one's lower tendencies has to be actually demonstrated on the outer plane, on the lower of the three planes. Thus, it seems to be with Taurus as well, the opposite sign to Scorpio. So this will or desire must express itself in the plane of outer living and in the environment, whether it is the environment of an individual man, of a nation, or a group of nations. So we're getting the impression here that Taurus is a manifestational sign, working inner results out on the outer planes of human living. As you know, he says, astrologers have long pointed out that this sign concerns the physical body, among other factors. It is one of the preeminent signs of sex, interestingly, along with Libra and Scorpio. And Mars is related to the physical body. You can only imagine what the combination of Mars in Taurus would be. It's in a detrimental position, and DK basically says that it's just adding there to the general struggle of the Taurian individual. We can see how the Taurus person would struggle between will and desire, between the higher will and the lower desire. So it is a physical sign. It has a lot to do with vitality and straight physicality on the lower three subplanes. This sign concerns the physical body, among other factors, and the health or wholeness of the body is closely connected with the expression of past desire. We're talking karma here. Past desire will lead to strong or weak bodies. Connected with the expression of past desire or of present idealism. And this is a point to be borne in mind. DK definitely connects to Taurus with idealism. It's not a six-ray sign, but he says the highest form of aspirational idealism is found in relation to Taurus. It is ruled by Venus, which is a planet which ultimately has a very high sixth ray. And as I say, we don't know the other rays of Taurus. We're only given the fourth ray. But to think that the first ray may be part of the picture and maybe the sixth ray as well, these are possibilities later to be confirmed. The health or wholeness, Taurus is much associated with vitality, which is really your treasure. A Taurus is connected with all things of value. Vitality is of great value. It holds coherently the body together. So if there is abundance of vitality, there will be a greater likelihood of wholeness in the body. And according to our desires leading to certain types of actions, so will the health or wholeness of the body be in a certain condition. So desire and idealism are two factors here that DK is relating to Taurus. He always gives us a different point of view. Desire or idealism related to Taurus. Okay. Today, the cure or care of the physical body is of paramount importance to practically everybody. I mean, certainly, when you look at all the health issues, I mean, well, some people are thinking vitally or thinking in terms of the prana and the etheric energy, but usually it's more the focus is more about the result of those energies in the physical body. Cure or care. We are an Aryan civilization, and we are connected with the number five, and that relates us to objectivity, and the dense physical body, of course, is the most objective of our vehicles. To practically everybody, and the thoughts of all people without exception, whether at war or not, are turned that way. So it's telling us we have a pretty materialistic consciousness, or at least focused on our most material vehicle. And I think, you know, we really can see this in our civilization. We just have to look at television, and everything is turned to the care of or the pampering of the physical body. It's all about food. It's about cosmetics. We're treating the physical man as if he were the real man in our particular civilization. Maybe this has something to do with the waning of the sixth ray, which tended to focus on the inner vehicles and away from the outer form. The seventh ray brings us right down onto the physical plane, and the physical body is, in a way, the seventh vehicle from a certain mode or method of counting. So today, the cure or care of the physical body is of paramount importance to practically everybody, and the thoughts of all people, without exceptions, whether at war or not, are turned that way. Well, we do have to prepare a form which under the seventh ray will hold and carry a lot more of the subtle energy than it can now. DK has told us we don't have especially healthy bodies, but under the seventh ray we will have more of them, and they will be able to carry the inner energy far more successfully. The emphasis upon the wholeness of the individual physical life is symbolic of the outer body of humanity, viewing all human beings as a unit. So, you know, we might ask, what is the health of the physical body of humanity? And I'm sure the masters assess it that way when they think about what kind of energies can be borne by the physical body of most people. I think, you know, he suggests that we're not rightly fed and not properly cared for, and that our habits are working against a truly resilient physical body, which will be cultivated under the seventh ray. Again, gold is the symbol which today governs man's desires, whether national, economic, or religious. Master Moria warned of the time when the atmosphere would be thick with gold, and all that people would do would be to pursue gold, you know, the love of money here being the root of all evil. So this Taurus is a sign of values, and gold, interestingly enough, is associated partially with materialistic values, although we could spiral it up and think about the golden lotus, and we could think about the radiant sun, which the monad is, and gold would take on a higher meaning. But the pursuit of gold is interesting, too, when you look at the markets. The price of gold is skyrocketing because there's little faith in paper money, and people are looking where they can put their present financial energy so that it will not dissipate. So gold, it is connected with this sign. Interesting. King Midas, Taurus, gold, the golden touch. It is connected with this sign, and this is one of the indications that today the conflict in the world economic situation is based upon the upwelling of desire. Desire related to Taurus, the conflict related to the bread by which people live, and this has to be solved in Aquarius, where we break bread together in the upper room. We have to have a kind of perspective that cares about the economic welfare of all the people on the planet. You know, these days that's considered to be kind of a goody-goody or a do-gooder attitude and against the law of the survival of the fittest, but it turns out that those who really survive are those who know how to cooperate in group form, and this even has to do with the animal kingdom as well. So the conflict in the world economic situation, and there's been a severe conflict for some hundreds of years here, at least 200, is based upon the upwelling of desire, which we can expect in response to the Shambhala force when there is a response from unprepared forms to that great force. Ever since 1825, if you look at it, that's almost like 200 years ago. The Shambhala impact occurred. The possibility of great riches occurred to certain people. They began to imagine this. Maybe the heights of luxury that we're told about in Atlantis have not yet been achieved, but there are, we all are Atlanteans in a way. We've been there, and I'm sure there is in the heart and mind of many the desire to return to the great luxuries of Atlantis, regardless of the consequences on the human race as a whole. So we have a lot of purification of desire to deal with. Let's look at that here. Desire is necessary. In an esoteric way, therefore, quoting from a very ancient book of prophecy, very ancient. Wouldn't we like to know, you know, just how ancient? Sometimes DK tells us that this particular stanza is older than the Sensar, you know, older than Sanskrit, older than the Sensar. He seems to be hearkening back to Atlantean days as he culls some of these sources for our to present to us and for our understanding. The golden eye of Taurus points the way to those who likewise see. Now, we wonder if he's talking about particular star here, the eye of the bull, perhaps. That which is gold will someday too respond, passing from east to west in the dire time when the urge to gather gold shall rule the lower half, that is, the personality aspect of man and nations. That we're in that dire time, are we not? DK did say something interesting. He said, capitalism has emerged and wrecked the world. That is, for those who have almost the religion of capitalism, it is surprising to find DK taking such a strong stance. I mean, you know, he's not advocating communism, he's not advocating monarchy, he's not advocating capitalism. A blending of the best aspects of all of these must someday emerge. That which is gold will someday, too, you know, the desire for gold, the desire for energy with which to fulfill the instincts and urges of the lower nature, that's what we're talking about here. That which is gold will someday, too, respond, passing from east to west And we maybe we're talking about the great riches of the East, and now the wealthier nations being in the West. In that dire time when the urge, there's the Martian, Taurian impulse, the urge to gather gold shall rule the lower half. And you almost wonder what proportion of humanity will be ruled by that, ruled the lower half. You know, from that point of view, the United States being maybe the most capitalistic of all the nations is perhaps in this respect one of the most selfish, though its heart is good, D.K. tells us. The search for gold, here's another way of looking at that search, the search for golden light divine directs the bull of life, a higher meaning of gold, the bull of form. These two must meet, and meeting clash. Thus vanishes gold, and he did. How interesting. He told us that it may be found necessary to remove money, per se, from humanity. We wonder if some of the barter systems that are emerging here are not a harbinger of this removal. Maybe money becomes somehow worthless. The gold will vanish. Now, there's two ways of thinking of gold vanishing. For the golden egoic lotus vanishes when man becomes sufficiently advanced. From another point of view, a higher standard of values emerges, perhaps based upon merit, a meritocracy in which the value of an individual to society determines the amount of energy which that individual receives. Anyway, we may be looking at the future breaking down of the financial system, and this may be what he calls the vanishing of gold. He did tell us that seventh-ray disciples around the time of the first initiation are coming in to straighten all this out and to control the means by which man lives. So he said something of this nature, and Master Moria said something of this nature, both decrying the rulership of civilization by the urge to acquire gold, or that which gold symbolizes, the energy of money, a symbol of lower power. Okay. Search now, and he's given us two kinds of searches for gold. Now, many of us are seeking to come on rapport with the soul and become soul-infused personalities, and we are also searching for gold, are we not? Something of very high value, for the golden light divine that emanates from the higher mental plane through the egoic lotus and sponsored by the solar angel. That's what we're looking for. So the bull of life is directed in that direction towards illumination, and the bull of form towards the acquisition of these lower energies which can fulfill the instinctual nature, the elemental nature. They will meet, and they are clashing. They are clashing even now. Thus vanishes gold. In the clash, gold will vanish, I suppose. In the clash comes the vanishing of gold. Yes. The earthly triplicity of Capricorn, Virgo, and Taurus forms a triangle of material expression which is of profound interest as one studies it either from the angle of the ordinary round of the zodiac, which presumably is clockwise, followed by average and undeveloped humanity, or from the angle of the disciple wherein the path of zodiacal progress is reversed. Even though the disciple is moving in the natural direction of the signs, he is also, in a sense, swimming against stream, like the salmon attempting to go home and meeting many perils along the way, including bears, whatever they are, you know, bears in the rapids and the dams, which like tasty salmon dish. So there are many dangers to be fought as the disciple swims upstream. All of these signs are connected with light in a profound way. he does talk about them in terms of material expression, and that's usually the way the most astrologers of the Orthodox type consider the Earth signs, but they have great connection too with the inner and higher light, and that's you have to know something about esotericism to apply astrology esoterically. The real difficulty when people try to learn esoteric astrology without a foundation of esotericism is they don't have the energy system of man to think about with accuracy, and they cannot apply it to that energy system and to its development. So we have to teach these two things simultaneously, the constitution of man and the function of that constitution and esoteric astrology. Then we'll be able to apply the zodiacal energies to higher areas of energy expression that are normally considered by the average individual. In the first case, Capricorn, let's see, what order did he put them in here? Capricorn, Virgo, and Taurus. So, well, he's moving in a clockwise direction, isn't he? Because normally, if you were moving in a counterclockwise direction, Taurus would follow Capricorn. But he begins with Capricorn and with great density. It marks the point of greatest density, you know, the so-called earth-bound soul, the hardness of such an individual and the resistance of such an individual to the spiritually civilizing forces. Marks the point of greatest density and concrete expression and shows the life divine deeply embedded in substance. It's the inverted mountain in a way, you know, have kind of a diamond shape here. And so, you know, the mountain of initiation is like this, but the mountain of, well, it's not the mountain, it's the pit, the inverted infernal states and hierarchies. So this is the true state of death as far as the life is concerned, because it's entombed, mummified, crystallized, it can't break out. Its shell is so hard that there's no way for the outside to get in and the inside to get out. Occasional massive destructions are needed in order to break that outer shell, that outer periphery. So this is the true state of death as far as life is concerned. It is captivity in form. And we have to think about that, the earthbound soul. If we were to go, let's see, what else does it say about Capricorn there when we are dealing with the early stages of evolution? We go to esoteric astrology and we go to page 333. Whoop, did do that correctly? F2333? Okay. Yeah, we have Capricorn here, the earthbound soul. Yes, the earthbound soul, and that's all it says. The earthbound soul has a state of deep imprisonment, and in this case, the Saturnian rulership does mean imprisonment. Saturn, interestingly, appears often in the charts of criminals and people destined for prison when they go to prison. Saturn means the law, which has captured you and put you in confinement until you learn the lesson of the restriction of freedom, so you more wisely use what freedom you have when your circumstances are less constricted. So, captivity in form. In Virgo, however, now we're going, you know, clockwise, that life makes its inner pressure felt. Something is trying to come out. Some kind of creative germ is trying to express itself, faint yet real, of the hidden pressure felt in the movement, faint yet real, of the hidden life, which is the, this is actually what will become the Christ life, the hidden life, let's call it that, what will become the Christ life, begins to pulsate, the pulse of life. It's a first ray, pulsation is a first ray type of movement. Life is alive within the encapsulating form and will come to birth, will break out. Producing in Taurus that reaction to desire and that onward rush and powerful movement which distinguishes the evolutionary progress of the individual working under the impulse of desire. Let's see here. Okay. Working under the impulse of desire. So that life, in order to break out, has to express itself first as desire, and then there will be an understanding of whether desires have led to favorable or unfavorable results. Interesting that Taurus should be connected with the evolutionary process, the onward rush of the bull of God. Sometimes the will to evolve is connected with the third ray, but if you think about it, although Taurus perhaps, to our knowledge, does not manifest the third ray, it is connected with the Earth, strongly connected with the Earth, which is the third ray planet. It's connected with Mercury, which has a strong third ray part to it. Also, Vulcan is working in the lower three worlds quite prominently. And the materialism of Taurus and the materiality of the third ray are both found together. So materiality of Taurus and of of ray three are related. So the onward rush and powerful movement which distinguishes the evolutionary process of the individual, especially once animated by a sufficient incentive. A sufficient desire, because desire is an energy which urges one onward and forward and inclines one to take risks which are deleterious to the form, just so one can break out of the form. And this is actually good, because if one was always respecting one's comfort and sought to remain forever safe and protected within the confining walls of form, there would be no progress. So this Virgoan pressure of the Christ life trying to come to birth is forcing the process of desire forward. Here he is related, you see, the three signs going on the counterclockwise wheel. Forget not that the first thrill or response of the Christ life, which is consciousness, let's remember that, which is consciousness, Christ is to the pull, urge, or suggestion of the form nature in which it, wherein it finds itself. So the consciousness reaches out to form. But one day into the worlds of form, that power must fail to penetrate. You know, this is the integration formula on the second ray, and it tells us that even though consciousness or the burgeoning Christ life, when it's still encapsulated, reaches out to form, one day it must not be so. Into the worlds of form, that power must fail. That's it. Get enough words, you'll get it. Perhaps. Oh, no. That's not it. There we go. Okay, let's see if I can do this correctly. Going back, none, into the worlds, okay, worlds of, okay, fail to penetrate, let's try that, and there are two of them. Yes, that power must, there it is, the power to draw unto oneself, you know, usually form, that's what one draws unto oneself at first, must dominate, but into the worlds of form, that power must someday fail to penetrate. And this is the first step towards deeper search. So here's the integration of formula for ray 2, but we're talking about an earlier stage when we're still on the non-reversed wheel, the clockwise wheel. So the Christ life awakening will begin to love the form. Christ life is love, and at first, love of form, which is one of the major characteristics of Taurus. They deal with form and the beauty of form and the love of form, and of course, if they're like the Buddha, they may recognize the beauty, but they will also recognize the snare that form is, and they will learn how to detach themselves accordingly. Let's see where we are here. Well, we're getting there. Then later, when all the resources of the form nature, drawn out through desire, are exhausted. I mean, the man has tasted all possibilities of form satisfaction, and all that form could offer, all the resources of the form nature, let's just put it like this, all that form could offer, are exhausted, and the Christ life is exceeding strong and ready to reveal itself through the death of the mother, the form, then and not until then is there progress, is the progress of the wheel arrested, and revolution takes place, with the life aspect reversing itself upon the wheel. The life aspect of the true inner man, the true inner being, reverses and changes desire into aspiration. Oop, atomic subplane, that won't do. Into aspiration. And we remember we were studying and we noticed that, interestingly, Taurus is one of those signs involved in the reversal of the wheel, even though Uranus is in its fall position in Taurus. But I guess, you know, Taurus is involved in the reversal of the wheel because we're dealing with the reorientation of the desire nature. Taurus is involved in the reversal of the wheel because we are dealing with the reversal of the desire nature, which Taurus rules. So, then and not until then is the progress of the wheel arrested. This onward rush of the wheel, we might almost say, that's what's really happening. Incarnation after incarnation. Onward rush or turning of the wheel. Incarnation after incarnation. And revolution takes place. The wheel has to, as it were, slow down, and against all the momentum that has been built up in the past because of desire, one must assert oneself and change one's habits. And, you know, temptations in a way are all of those desires which previously were active and now cannot be acted upon, still prompting the individual as they used to, but now a new resolution, a new fixed determination, also ruled by Taurus, occurs. I'm beginning to think that, you know, I know some of my friends have Mars and Taurus, and if you're a disciple, it is a big battle to stop that rajasic, active pursuit of desire and somehow take a stand steadfastly, maybe using the first ray or the fourth ray, and then reverse the tendency. Then the disciple, an expression of the Christ life in its early manifested stages, because it's only the initiate who is an expression of the Christ life in later manifested stages, having transmuted desire into aspiration, which is done in Taurus, okay, begins his career objectively and in full consciousness, not, you know, mystically or mistily, but almost scientifically, knowing what he's doing, in the sign Taurus and on the wings of aspiration, proceeds towards Virgo. Taurus and aspiration, let us not forget. The highest form of aspirational idealism found in Taurus proceeds towards Virgo, and being both the mother and the child, enters the house of labor. So he's aware of his form nature, but also of that which is attempting to come to birth and emerge from and externalize from the mother aspect. From that house, the disciple in due time arrives at Capricorn, where he finally subdues matter, form, or concrete expression to divine uses and purposes, and thus demonstrates the triumph. There's that word in Capricorn, and also found in Scorpio, but a higher type of triumph in Capricorn, demonstrates the triumph and the potency of the Christ life. Okay, so we have, moving along here, so DK has given us an idea here of the reversed wheel, from the wings of aspiration to the labor of birthing the Christ life, and then the Christ life grows in strength and maturity and eventually triumphs, demonstrating its potency in Capricorn. Such a very different view of Capricorn, isn't it, than is usually found in the exoteric astrology. I mean, I don't know, when I first began to study these contrasting systems, I didn't really know whether I saw a great deal of difference, or perhaps the differences didn't mean a lot to me. The further I go, the more I see how profound is the difference between the esoteric interpretation and the ordinary personal interpretation, which touches occasionally on a little bit of spirituality in the case of transitional astrologers, but those who are truly dealing with the development of the soul, maybe they are, their numbers growing, but it has not been great up to this time. So we've seen the earth signs operating in two directions. That's what we've seen here, and I'll just put that down. The earth signs operating in two directions. Yes, so dense crystallization and Capricorn to Sun quickening in Virgo, which expresses itself in the outreach towards form and desire. But then there is an elevation of desire, and desire changes into aspiration in Taurus and moves towards the true birth of the Christ, which becomes powerful as it grows, going through the tests of Scorpio, of course, and then finally reaching that climactic triumph in Capricorn. So what I'll do here is say this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 107A, page 380, I suppose. Page 380. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology 107B, also page 380. And we'll go on. This is a very interesting sign, and interestingly enough, you know, there's much of summation here being done in Taurus instead of in Pisces. Pisces was one of the first signs we dealt with. And now we're ending the 12 in Taurus, which does, of course, through the Shambhala force, induce a kind of synthesis. But let's just say there's oftentimes a concentration of desire on the clockwise wheel in Taurus before, in a way, going forth in the clockwise direction in Aries. So we'll come back in a little while and continue with this interesting chapter on Taurus. Okay.